Warning, the podcast Under the Stairs is not safe for work. We'll feature movie spoilers and language which most listeners may find offensive. Brought to you in conjunction with Legion Podcast Network. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Everyone, and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is bonus episode number 50. I'm your host Duncan McLeish, and welcome to the show. This is the first of a three-part bonus series in October, where I will be reviewing all 31 movies watched as part of my 31 of October. Now, every year I do a 31 of October. I've done it for, I want to say, at least 5-6 years now consistently, making sure that I always watch one horror movie every single night in October. Now, this is kind of like a small task for me anyway, because I tend to watch a horror movie a night anyway, but you know, you usually take some time off, you do other things, you watch other movies, you sometimes take a little break from the genre. October, I try and make sure it's consistent. And the first couple of years I did it, I kind of meandered through some of the movies I really liked, some movies that I wanted to give second chances to. In the last couple of years, I've focused purely on movies that are out in the year of that list. It's a good way to make sure that when I get to the end of the year, I've seen as many movies as possible so I can make my top 20 of that year. So, 2017 is the year we're in, and I planned out a list of 31 horror movies that I had not seen this year. Now, the list includes movies that came out all the way through the year up until October, but also includes movies that are making their way for cinematic release at the cinema, so I will be out seeing them as and when they're released as part of my list, and movies that are getting released on VOD, etc. as well. So, the original list I posted on the blog page on tputzcast.com. The list has slightly changed as we've went through the first couple of days, mostly down to the fact that certain movies that are apparently available are not available in the UK yet. So I've been having to switch things around to make sure it's only ones that I could get access to that I have reviewed. So, on this episode, we'll be covering the first 10, the movies I watched from Sunday the 1st of October to Tuesday, October 10th. There'll also be two further bonus episodes that are released in this month. Well, the last episode will probably get released very early November, covering the remaining 21 movies from the list. So, what can you expect on this episode? Well, many reviews of Gerald's Game, A Cure for Wellness, Phoenix Forgotten, Double X, Eat Locals, Don't Kill It, Life, Population Zero, Little Evil, and Personal Shopper. So, I'm going to jump out just now because we have a lot of movies to discuss, and this is a bonus episode. I don't want to spend too much time going through them. So we're going to have maybe between 5 and 10 minute reviews of each of these movies, and I'm going to take a break and get myself a drink in between the end of this segment and the review starting up. So you're going to hear promos for shows that I love, a bit of music, and when I return, I'm going to be doing the first 5 movies covered by myself as part of my 31 of October. All that and more coming up right after this.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host Cure What Ails You.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Hi, I'm Joe Parker, and I'd like to invite you to check out my show, The Hybrid Moments Podcast. I'm just an average guy with a slew of interests, and the podcast is an extension of that. The theme of the show varies episode by episode, but some of the topics I cover include horror, music, comics, just about anything but politics. So if you like a little variety in your life, come on by and check out the show. You can find me on iTunes or Stitcher, or check out the website, thehybridmomentspodcast.com. You can also join the group on Facebook at The Hybrid Moments Podcast in the group section. Feel free to mingle, leave feedback, or suggestions for future shows. That's The Hybrid Moments Podcast with Joe Parker. Tune in to see what I cover next.
First, on Sunday the 1st, I sat down to watch a movie I had been hugely anticipating for release in 2017. It is the new offering by horror wunderkind Mike Flanagan and his adaptation of Stephen King's Gerald's Game. Now, everyone who has listened to this show for, I don't know, anything longer than maybe a couple of months, well, no, I'm kind of Flanagan daft. I think the guy is a phenomenal director in the genre, and I'm dedicating an entire show to him in October with guests Bo Ransdell and Jamie J. Salmons, called The Shiflanigans, where we're going to cover all the movies in his back catalogue, including Gerald's Game. So this is like a kind of taster of maybe some of what I think of Gerald's Game, the full review coming in November. See, I was really looking forward to this. Flanagan's previous outing on Netflix was Hush, which I thought was an incredible, tense, tight, very kind of claustrophobic play on the... Is it a slasher? Is it a home invasion movie? I thought it was incredible. I thought it was really, 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 really good. So he has since went away, done a stint at doing one of the Ouija movies, which I thought was good. I thought it was a surprisingly good outing for as a sequel to a movie which I really thought was shit. But yeah, he's a to say he's a safe pair of hands is an understatement. He's a great director, really, really, really good director. So I was interested when I heard this drop. This is one of King's works that I wasn't familiar with. I knew its name had been mentioned several times as one of these it'll never get filmed projects, so I was glad that Netflix gave him the backing to put out Gerald's Game. The movie stars Carla Gugino, I'm sure that's pronounced wrong, the tall man from Twin Peaks, Bruce Greenwood, who is in everything, tends to either play a complete prick or the president, one of the two. And the synopsis is listed on IMDb for this movie is, while trying to spice up their marriage in their remote lake house, Jessie must fight to survive when her husband dies unexpectedly, leaving her handcuffed to their bed frame. So, this movie's fucking awesome. Absolutely awesome. Now, I've seen a bit of bite back on the interwebs from people saying that they couldn't get into it, they thought it was too long, at 145 minutes I think it is in length, and they didn't like the last act of the movie, thought it felt rushed. So I've never read the book, so I don't know if that's how the book goes. I've been told from some people that that is how the book goes, and if that's the case, then you know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't in Stephen King land. If you adapt it exactly like Stephen King did it, a lot of people will say, well, there's too much time faffing around, because that tends to be how King writes his books. And it works in the Stephen King book world, but doesn't translate overly well into movie. And if you deviate from it, Stephen King fans will hate you, because they only want to see what King wrote in a book on the screen. What I will say is the central performance by Carla playing Jessie is incredible. I thought she was really, really, really good. The kind of wave of panic that sets over her face, the fact that we learn more about her character as the movie goes on, and I'm very much aware that I don't want to spoil any of these movies because they're all just out this year, so they're all new, so no spoilers in any of these reviews. But Carla's portrayal of Jessie as a character and the explanations as to why she is, why she married who she married, etc., were the thing that kind of took me back. I got a kind of Dolores Claiborne vibe about this movie, which is like one of the King adaptations that I genuinely love, most importantly because I think Kathy Bates is phenomenal in it. But there is more than just one or two similarities there, and I've been advised that in the greater King canon those stories are kind of linked, which makes a lot of sense. I think the visuals are stunning in this movie. The flashback sequences during the eclipse are incredible. And then the reveal of what is stalking her as she is trapped to the bed is pretty amazing as well. I mean, the movie will most certainly be discussed because of one scene in particular that the character does to try and escape the handcuffs. And yeah, that's a big talking point, and it is very gruesome and it doesn't shy away from it. But I think if that's what you're focusing on, you're missing the pure beauty of this movie, which is the way it's shot, the effortlessness in the acting, the tenseness, and the fact that we are stuck with a character trapped to a bed for, 90% of this movie? And to me, it just flowed and worked really well. Flanagan, it's another home run for me. I don't think it's his best movie, but I think it's certainly the sort of genre stuff I want to see him do in the future. And I cannot wait to see what he tackles next. And hopefully it's another Stephen King project. This one was a high recommend for me. You've still got quite a few days left in October. If you've not watched this yet and you've got Netflix subscription, get on this one. Do not let it get away. Flanagan, once again, continuing his stellar run of genre releases with Gerald's Game. If I was to give it a score at 5, this one to me gets a 4.5. I think it's an excellent piece of horror cinema and one very much worth your time. So yeah, that was Gerald's Game, available now on Netflix. So the second movie, which came on October 2nd, which was a Monday, I watched a little movie that, to be honest with you, I was kind of apprehensive about, most notably because I thought the trailers looked bitching, but then the kind of the lukewarm response, I think that's a nice way to say that the amount of shit that was dropped in this movie when it came out back in February, really did put me off going to see it at the cinema. And I hate it when that happens, because I really enjoy being of the opinion that I don't like to let people dictate to me what I should and shouldn't watch, or what I will like and what I won't like. But when the reviews came out generally negative across the board, I was like, that is this worth the cinema visit, or is this one worth the 31 days of October? And of course it landed in the 31 days of October, because I'm a pussy that way, sorry Baz. So yeah, this is A Cure for Wellness, directed by Gore Verbinski. Gore Verbinski came to my attention with The Mexican, which I think is actually a semi-decent movie. And off the back of that movie, he somehow landed the Ring American remake in 2002. And then since then has been doing like a ton of work on Pirates of the Caribbean stuff. Did the Lone Ranger movie, which I really didn't like. And this is kind of his return to the genre, so to speak. After the Lone Ranger lost a lot of money, he decided to kind of turn his hand back to genre stuff. And A Cure for Wellness is that movie, which, like I say, if you watch the trailers when this movie was about to come out, it looked tense, it looked claustrophobic. Some of the imagery was really quite disgusting. Leeches, eels, bathtubs, insane people. A sanatorium, or sanitarium, one of the two. I was understandably not like happy to see this movie, in that one of the things that's almost 100% guaranteed to freak me out is anything set in an insane asylum. One of my big fears, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, is the loss of sanity or issues with mental health. I'm quite a regimented, disciplined person, that I think the idea that what I believe in, or the things that I cling to, is actually insanity is worrying. So you tend to put a movie in an insane asylum, you're going to get the scares out of me, you're going to put the heebie-jeebies up me. So yeah, I was keen from the off. The movie most notably stars Jason Isaacs, who has been in Event Horizon. He is probably more now known for Lucius Malfoy in the Harry Potter movies. And the main role is taken up by Dane Deehan. Deehan has been in, I think he played the Green Goblin in that reboot of the Spider-Man things, but he was in Chronicle and some other stuff. He's kind of fairly on the rise sort of actor. The synopsis for this one is listed on IMDb as: an ambitious young executive is sent to retrieve his company's CEO from an idyllic but mysterious wellness centre at a remote location in the Swiss Alps, but soon suspects that the spa's treatments are not what they seem. So the big complaint I read about this movie was it was too long and nothing happened in it. And not a lot happens in this movie. So that is a legitimate observation. And the movie is almost 2.5 hours long. So yeah, maybe it is too long for a horror movie. But I really dug this movie, if I'm honest. I thought it looked like, you know, a fortune had been spent on this movie. I was actually surprised earlier on when I was checking to see how much the budget was on the movie, and IMDb has it listed for about 40 million, and this movie looks like it was made for like about 90 million. It's so immaculately shot, and the precision and eye for detail is almost Kubrickian. The kind of every shot in this movie was like eye candy to me. I found myself mesmerized by it. It's not a movie that really goes for shock value. It more gives you set pieces of things to make you squirm. And if you are like me and susceptible to those sort of set pieces, then I imagine this movie worked really well for you. If you're not, then I imagine it probably did nothing for you except drag its feet. I thought the scoring was great on it. I thought the acting was phenomenal. I think Jason Isaac playing a villain is always great, even where there's, you know, that kind of hint of the Germanic accent in him, in a doctor's role. Could this guy, you know, Dr. Vollmer, come from maybe Nazi background doing experiments? You don't know. Dane DeHaan playing Lockhart is brilliant. Great, captivating screen presence. He always kind of looks a bit unwell. Like, all he needs is a wee cup of tea and a wee biscuit and a wee seat in front of a fire with a shawl over the top of him and he'll be fine. It comes down to these things that I think it depends what sort of horror movie you're after. If you're looking for one that's bang, shares, like gore, shock, all the rest, this movie is definitely not for you. However, if you are someone that enjoys a slow burn, a setup, something that's visually arresting, then I think A Cure for Wellness does that really well. It didn't feel as long as the runtime is for me at all, and I know other people felt that it felt a lot longer, but yeah, I don't think the movie even is such a strange movie to describe, in that it's kind of like an unfolding mystery that doesn't really unfold and doesn't really culminate with a kind of satisfying close of, well, that's all right then, and the good guy moves on, or the bad guys can. It's a weird, kind of almost ambiguous sort of ending that doesn't feel befitting of what the subject matter of the movie is. But that all being said, I thought it was great. I really, really enjoyed it. And yeah, my own complaint would have been maybe one or two more scares. But with that, I thought it was a pretty fantastic movie. My score for A Cure for Wellness is a hearty 4 out of 5. Yeah, I did have a lot of good things to say about this movie, and like I say, I openly admit that there's a very good chance that you find this one boring as shit, but Duncan did not. The Ayatollah was in, and he enjoyed this movie. So yeah, that's A Cure for Wellness, and that's available on VOD, Blu-ray and DVD now. So next up was the movie from Tuesday the 2nd of October, and I switched up the pace a little bit, decided to get some found footage in the diet, and I checked out Phoenix Forgotten, which is written and directed by Justin Barber. The movie stars relative unknowns, Florence Hartigan, Luke Spencer-Roberts, Chelsea Lopez, other couple of folks are in there. Synopsis for this one, as listed on IMDb, is 20 years after three teenagers disappeared in the wake of a mysterious light appearing above Phoenix, Arizona, unseen footage from that night has been discovered, chronicling the final hours of the fateful expedition. So I remember the ad campaign for this. I can't remember if this actually got a UK release. I'm going to say it didn't. And if it did, it must have been really short. Probably not a massive cinematic push for this one at all. And if I'm honest, it was all right. I'd obviously not go into too much. If you've seen the majority of found footage horror movies, this fits very much into that mold without bringing anything new at all, really. It's someone investigating something that happened to some people and finding some footage and then watching the footage, which kind of answers the question but leaves more questions at the end. Very much played off as if this did happen. So this is one of those ones where it's saying, no, these events are real. I just found it, I found the first half of the movie frustratingly slow at building up any sort of tension. Like, really, it was just kind of run-of-the-mill, generic found footage nonsense. And I kept thinking, well, give us, we know that obviously the After Effects characters have went missing, but give me something. Hook me in. The Blair Witch knew how to hook me in, because it kept that stuff, that mythology was floating all the way through the movie. This one, it only really ramps up in the last 15 minutes, and by then it kind of follows exactly the pattern you expect from a found footage movie. It's not bad. I thought the acting was pretty good, but it's bringing nothing new to the table at all. And yeah, it was a bit frustrating. I sometimes feel that I'm overly harsh on found footage movies, and it's not because I dislike them. It's just I feel it is a medium to deliver certain stories that is sometimes used as a way to cut cost, as opposed to the right way, which is, does it fit the telling of the story? And I just felt this one, it was just plain, painfully average, I think, which was my biggest takeaway from it. If I was to score it, I would say 3, or maybe 2.5, actually. I'll go 2.5. I'll somewhere between didn't like it and liked it. Yeah, and this one could have been a bit better, I think. It just never really lived up to what I was wanting for it. And it's an hour and a half that you could easily spend watching something else. So yeah, that was Phoenix Forgotten, and that was my third movie review. And then we roll on to Wednesday the 4th. And once again, shaking things up, I've finally got a chance to watch XX, the all-female directed anthology movie. It's currently on Netflix in the UK at the moment. So I thought, you know, I want to check this out and see what this is all about. Now, I've heard, once again, mixed reviews about this one. Quite a lot of people that I know that were looking forward to it told me that it wasn't very good. And I kind of held off on this one as soon as I found out it was on Netflix. Because it was like that. Like, this is another one of those ones. Perfect for the 31 of October. So overall, we have 4 directors and 4 stories. Roxanne Benjamin, Karen Kusma, St. Vincent, and Jovanka Jolkvich, which I'm fairly sure is pronounced wrong. I apologise. Where to begin with this one? I did not like this, I'll be honest with you. Anthologies usually have me in that there's at least one that I'll say, well, I kind of justified the movie because without this movie of things I don't like, I would never have seen this one. I don't like any of the shorts in this one at all. I mean, they were well shot and kind of well crafted, but they just fell. Every one fell flat for me. The Box, which is based on a Jack Ketchum story and directed by, I'm going to pronounce her name wrong, so I'm going to say Jovanka. Where to begin? I thought the setup was quite interesting at the start. I thought that there was probably some sort of witty message somewhere in it, but I don't think it was well delivered, and I kind of hated the reveal at the end. It felt like it was dragging its feet. The second one directed by St. Vincent, directed The Birthday Cake. It was fun, it was kind of funny, but I felt, once again, it felt overly long. I felt the reveal took too long to get to it. When it happened, I was kind of laughing at the start, and then I just kind of lost my interest. Started checking my phone during the second short in this one, which is never a good sign. You don't want me checking my phone. You just want to keep my attention on the screen. I didn't think the acting was actually all that good in that one either. It just wasn't interesting. Then the third segment by Roxanne Benjamin, Don't Fall. Artistically shot very nicely. I thought the composition was really good. I thought the acting was actually decent in this one as well. I knew the story pretty much 5 minutes into it, and that kind of put me off it, because I've seen this sort of story done loads of times, and I think that's maybe one of my biggest gripes, and I'll come to it at the very end. But the last one was Her Only Living Son, and that was directed by Karen Kusama, who I think is a great director. And she's a bloody great director. I lavished so much praise on The Invitation last year. I thought The Invitation was a great movie, and I have a wee soft spot for Jennifer's Body, which I think is a movie that some people kind of overlook pretty quick because it's got Megan Fox in it. But I think it's, you know, a really witty, well-written movie. This one kind of felt like it could have had some chops, but I wasn't invested. I really wasn't. I don't know if I approached this movie in a bad mood, which maybe I did. But the only thing I liked, about Double X was the linking segments. I thought they were really artistically well shot, and I liked that. I think, personally, that a lot was made of this, and that we're going to give all these women their opportunity to make their own horror anthology shorts, and we're going to piece them together, and it's good. And I am 100% with that. I think women in horror should be promoted, because I think some of my favourite horror movies of all time have been directed by women. I think they should be promoted, encouraged where possible to go down that road and not into some of the other parts of the industry. If you want to be a director, if you want to be a writer and get involved in that sort of thing, please do it. My issue is, I get the feeling that this was all about the marketing and not about the content, because I don't think any of these four shorts put in any other anthology series would stand out either. I think on their own, they all kind of are mediocre at best. And when you package them together, it was an exercise in mediocrity. And very frustrating, very, very frustrating movie to watch, because I was willing it to do better each segment that started, and ultimately got to the end and I was frustrated that I just felt it was bland. I thought the whole thing was bland. So that was XX. My review for this movie is a biting 1.5 stars. Didn't hate it, but can't say that I only didn't like it. It's somewhere in between the two, which was frustrating. If you want to check the movie out though, it is on Netflix in the UK at the moment. If you have seen it or seen any of the movies that I mentioned thus far, please interact with me on the Facebook group page and let me know your opinions and your thoughts on some of these movies. And then on to day number 5. So this is the final review of this first series of reviews in this episode. We're going to take a break after this review and then come back with the next 5 movie reviews. So originally on my list was a movie called Keep Watching, which I had been assured is available. I can't find it anywhere. Couldn't buy it. Couldn't find a VOD place to stream it. So with that in mind, I had to change things around. So I pulled forward my Friday movie to Thursday, and I checked out Eat Locals, which is what I've been looking forward to, because it's I think it's the directorial debut of Jason Fleming, who is a great actor, has been in things like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, Snatch. He was in From Hell, and this is his, like I say, I think his directorial debut, doing a horror comedy of sorts. The main role played by Charlie Cox, who is now best known as Daredevil in the Netflix short sort of TV show. And the synopsis for this one on IMDb is, facing difficult times and with their glory days long gone, the 8 undisputed British vampire overlords gather up for their semi-centennial meeting. However, before the break of dawn, there will be blood and corpses. Lots of them. So I actually thought this was kind of cool, to be honest with you. I thought it was quirky. I thought there was really good use of kind of cinematography. The cast is actually really powerful for a British horror movie. There's a lot of faces in here that you will have seen before. The likes of people like Dexter Fletcher, Tony Curran, Mackenzie Crook, Vincent Regan. Like just loads and loads and loads of actors that you're like, oh, I know you from this. Oh, I know you from that. From that point of view, I thought it was really good. It's one of these ones where vampire movies kind of have went into the super serious realm of, you know, we're stuck as eternity as vampires and life is so hard and let's follow them and feel sorry for them. Or you go down the road of What We Do in the Shadows, where it's like, look, it's fun, it's quirky, have a laugh. This one kind of falls into the latter, but I don't know. I thought the practical effects were really good. I thought there's some good mix of almost like comic book animation kind of chucked in for good effect. I thought it was surprisingly funny. I did chuckle quite a bit to it. It's pure popcorn fodder, this movie. It's not one that you really need to start, oh, I don't know where this is going or anything like that. You literally just sit down, switch your brain off and take in the sights of the movie. Thought the acting was of a high standard, but like I say, the cast was really good. And yeah, I think it's one of these ones where I feel that it's probably not going to get much traction for a good couple of years, and then like movies like The Cottage or Severance, people will start waking up to it maybe 3 or 4 years down the line going, oh, this is actually a surprisingly good, funny little movie. Yeah, that's what I think. It's a lot of fun, but not. I don't know. I'm trying to damn it with faint praise in some respects, but at the same time, like when it finished, I was like, ah, that killed a bit of time, and it was fun doing it. So yeah, if I was to give a review grade to Eat Locals, I would say it's a 3. It's a solid 3, right in the middle. This one's slightly more difficult to get a hold of. I had to buy it on VOD, so there are other means of finding this movie, but it came out in September in the UK. I think it may have been out in the States slightly before that, but yeah, it should be available now widely, so check it out. And with that, that's the first half of the reviews of this bonus episode number 50. I'm going to take a short break. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear another song because it's a bonus episode and we need to fill that air with things, that dead, dead air. When I return, we're going to be looking at the final 5 movies from my first 10 days on my 31 of October. All that and more coming up right after this.
I'm Cootie.
My name is X.
And I'm Chef Al, and we're your hosts on the Kiss the Goat podcast.
On our show, we're going to break down some of your favorite devil movies from the past 50 years.
We also drink and talk about religion.
Which is a terrible idea.
That is a great idea.
And I'm going to give you some great recipe ideas to go along with the movies that we've been watching.
We also answer questions from our listeners on every single episode.
And I also, frankly, discuss my sex life at really inappropriate times.
She does!
I do! It's a thing!
I tell terrible jokes, sing when I'm drunk.
And I haven't been paid yet. They said they would pay me, and they,
Let's Kiss the Goat! Exclusively on the Legion Network of Podcasts.
Seriously, can I get some money?
Just do the job, Al.
Hello, this is the Doom Show. Keep on keeping on and keep on trucking, America. We don't listen to our feedback because we don't get any.
The truth hurts.
I just alienated the two people that give us constant feedback. Sorry, guys.
That's gotta go.
That's gotta go in there.
So on the show, we talk about giallo movies and slasher movies and cult movies. Sometimes we even talk about Cameron Mitchell and his movies. I am Richard. Who are you?
I am Brad, the guy that's not Richard, or Jeffrey, or Simon.
That's right. We have 4 people, and we always talk at once, except to each other.
Jeffrey lives up north. Simon lives across the world. Richard lives in Penis, Alabama.
Hello, This is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Check out the other shows on legionpodcast.com. You can check out more Hello, This is the Doom Show at hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or at doommoviethon.com.
Check for our Amazon exclusive Hello, This is the Doom Show cookbook.
Do you like hot dogs?
We got them.
Do you like mac and cheese?
We got it.
Do you like cheddar?
We have it.
Actually, we don't.
No cheddar.
Just Colby Jack.
Hello, this is the Doom Show. We never gave up on you because you never gave up on us.
Wow.
Right hand cast.
And welcome back. Right, so we did our first five movies to recount: Gerald's Game, A Cure for Wellness, Phoenix Forgotten, Double X, and Eat Locals. Now it's the final five movies for my first 10 days of 31 of October 2017. Now, you will have heard me say on the previous review that Eat Locals was originally supposed to be my Friday, October 6th movie. And I moved that forward to Thursday because I couldn't find Keep Watching. So this entry wasn't originally on the list and by pure blind dumb luck appeared on Netflix, I think maybe a day or two before the review. And I was like, I remember this one from all the people talking about it at Frightfest. It's directed by Mike Mendez, a director that has done some movies that I think are pretty fun, other movies that I think are just plain stupid, and stars Dolph Lundgren, and it's called Don't Kill It. So Dolph Lundgren's in this one as Jebediah Woodley, a man who walks around hunting a particular kind of demon. It's a demon that jumps from body to body, but what you daren't do is kill the body that he's in, because when you do that, he inhabits your body. So, yeah, that's better than the synopsis on IMDb, which is an ancient demon terrorizes a tiny Mississippi town. Yeah, this one's dumb. It's like absolutely dumb as a bag of rocks. Dolph Lundgren looks like he is kind of having fun. Maybe, slash phoning it in. The practical effects are over the top, total nonsense, kind of love that sort of stuff. And the effects on the demon were actually really cool. The only thing that got annoying was the repetition of the same demon scream noise that they use for everyone, which, as it's like, you've clearly only got one sounder here, and it's the one you're deploying all the time, like a soundboard every time someone opens a mouth. That being said, the movie knows how to have a bit of fun with some fairly silly subject matter. I kind of thought the movie on some levels was like Evil Dead the TV show light, kind of wanting to be like that, but unfortunately not with Bruce Campbell in it and substituting with Dolph Lundgren. But yeah, it kind of flowed really well. It's silly. It's a really, really, really silly movie. And that, and watching obviously Eat Local the night before, kind of just had me in the sillies, and yeah, you may struggle to convince people to sit and watch this one unless you've got a bunch of beers and some popcorn and you're throwing at each other. But if you have the chance to check it, you certainly should. Like I say, Mike Mendez for me is one of these directors that is kind of hit or miss. He's been on the go for a while now, and he's put out quite a few movies by this stage. He did one of the better segments in Tales of Halloween, the anthology from a couple of years ago, Friday the 31st, I believe that one was. And last year he did a movie called The Last Heist with Henry Rollins, which was okay. It's on Netflix as well if you want to check it out. But he's obviously more known now for Big Ass Spider and Lavalantua, which are the kind of two bigger movies that he's been involved with. Big Ass Spider's a ton of fun as well. It's so over the top and, you know, it's a ton of nonsense, but it's, you know, it's worth checking out. I thought it's quite interesting. I liked The Grave Dancers. I thought The Grave Dancers was a woefully kind of underappreciated movie. I sometimes think people overlook that one for some reason, but if you ever get the chance, you check it out. It's a surprisingly good one, in this humble reviewer's opinion. But yeah, there we go. So if I was to give a grade to Don't Kill It, I would probably go the same way as I went with Eat Local. It's a 3, it's right in the middle, dumb fun, switch your brain off, sit down, watch it, have a laugh at how ridiculous it is, and then move on to the next movie, which is exactly what I'm about to do. Right into Saturday, October the 7th, when I sat down and checked out a little sci-fi horror movie called Life, directed by Daniel Espinosa. Maybe that's how you pronounce his name. I have a feeling that's probably not how you pronounce his name, and Baz is laughing at me going, ha ha ha. But yeah, that's Espinosa. He did Safe House, which I thought was a pretty cool little movie. obviously not in the same sort of realms of this. But yeah, this is his turn at doing a wee sci-fi horror movie. This one spectacularly came out before Alien Covenant, and obviously it's about a parasite in space that, you know, is wiping out a crew. So you can see the parallels, maybe. The movie stars a pretty good cast as well. Hiroki Sandana, Ryan Reynolds is in this one, Rebecca Ferguson, Jake Gyllenhaal, lots of other folks in the movie. And the synopsis is, a team of scientists aboard the International Space Station discover a rapidly evolving life form that caused extinction on Mars and now threatens all life on Earth. What did I think of this movie? This might be controversial, because I actually quite liked Alien Covenant. I thought Alien Covenant got a whole hell of a lot of negative shade flung on it, when I actually thought it was a pretty entertaining movie. I actually think Life might be better. I think Life was, to me, was really well cast. Had a much more claustrophobic feel to it. It's the sort of thing you'd expect from an Alien movie, funnily enough. And I quite liked the practical and special effects in the movie. Quite liked the design of the creature. Yeah, this movie has one of those kick them in the nuts endings that I love. Do that, I'm a happy, happy, happy man. I thought it was good. It's a bit long, that's maybe my only gripe. It's about an hour and three quarters. I think you could probably take 15 minutes out without, you know, totally jeopardising the flow of the movie. I thought the flow went really well, but yeah, I just thought it was really, really, really good. I thought it took some bold choices. It eliminates some characters that you don't expect to be eliminated at surprising times, and it all kind of culminates in an ending which I thought you've got the fucking balls in this guy, as Bo would say, to go there. Yeah, this one to me was really, really, really good. As a kind of a strong recommend from Duncan that you check out Life. My grading and review for Life is a 4. It's a 4 out of 5. Yeah, this one's one of the better ones that I've checked out thus far on the list. And one that I'll probably watch again before the year's out. Like I say, I thought it was really good. I think casting helps a lot with these sort of movies. And when you have Jake Gyllenhaal in a movie, you pretty much have my arse on the seat watching it. So it did not let down with that at all. So that was Life, and that was movie number 7. So let's move on to movie number 8. It's this little found footage movie called Population Zero. Now, I found this movie purely because I was typing in movies from 2017, horror movies that I have not, you know, all this sort of stuff, and this one came up. Now. I have said that the one thing I do not like this year, just can't abide it, is the fact that we appear to be in the year of it's not a horror movie, which seems to be the common trend of pretty much everyone on Facebook that is, you know, an extreme fan of the genre. I did that in quotation marks. To me, horror's subjective. If you find something scary and it doesn't scare someone else, it's a horror movie to you. There are certain rules that automatically default things to horror movies that are not scary. You know, they're like, you know, all Frankenstein movies should be scary because it's a horror movie. You know, these sort of things where we let certain movies pass and other ones which really set out a tone and intensity for some reason get disregarded because there's not a fucking monster in it. Population Zero to me is one that uses a horror styling, but I think I fall on the lines of, I would not personally classify this one as a horror movie. I would maybe class it as more a kind of, it's a full documentary. Let's do a bit of work on this one. So Population Zero, directed by Julian T. Pinter. The movie stars some relative unknowns: Dwayne Murray, Julian T. Pinter, Jonathan Potts, other folks. Synopsis for this one, is listed on IMDb is, in 2009, three young men were killed in a remote part of Yellowstone National Park. The only thing more shocking than the crime itself are the bizarre events that followed. So this one kind of felt to me like a cross between Lake Mungo and The Last Broadcast in terms of how it's set out, the premise of the movie and the way it's shot. Unfortunately, what it comes down to be more like is it steals heavily from the tropes of those movies, setting up like tone and atmosphere. Even the sound design is kind of set to make you unsettled. But the actual subject matter itself never really strays anywhere near horror territory. I actually will say of this, thus far in my 10 movies that I've watched, this is one of my favourites. Because I thought it was really, really well done with very little money. Thought the acting was of a surprisingly high standard as well. I found the story fascinating. I found myself actually getting encapsulated with this legal loophole that seems to appear in the movie as it goes out. And I would be lying if I said I wasn't slightly surprised at where the movie finished up. That being said, it's all fairly run-of-the-mill stuff that you would see if you watch anything on like the Crime Investigation Network. It never really strays too far from that sort of level of story. It's kind of in that vein. And as a result of that one, like I say, I tend to opt back for maybe more a crime full documentary than I would necessarily turn around and say it's an out-and-out horror movie. I would highly recommend you watch it if you're into kind of found footage, full documentaries, without the caveat of being scared out your shits. Scared out your shits, there's a new phrase. Then yeah, check out Population Zero. I just think it's a really interesting movie, and one that people should probably watch. So there you go. That was the movie that I checked out on Sunday, October 8th, which means we have two movies left. Monday the 9th, I was supposed to watch this little movie called Brimstone, which is apparently in cinemas. Could not find it anywhere playing near me at all, which was surprising because it's apparently out, and it starred Guy Pearce, who I think is a great actor. So I really wanted to see that one, but no, not available. So I switched it slightly, went for a movie I deliberately left off my list because I don't know why, actually. So it's another horror comedy. This one is available on Netflix in the UK and in the States, Netflix exclusive. It's Little Evil. It got released in September. The movie is directed by Eli Craig. Now, Eli Craig is one of these ones who has been involved with lots of little bits and bobs in the past, but we haven't seen him in a wee while. He has mostly done... it's all horror comedies he's been kind of more involved with. He's the guy behind Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, which is a movie that I fucking adore. I think it's hilarious. And then briefly, I think he started doing that Zombieland TV show thing that kind of went nowhere. And this is him kind of making his return with a horror comedy, Little Evil, which is ostensibly a kind of... It's almost... I don't know how to describe this one, because I kind of felt at one point when I was watching it, I was like, this almost feels like the setup to an Adam Sandler movie, but it's not. The main cast is Adam Scott, who we've seen in loads of things. Sally Field makes an appearance, which is great. Clancy Brown, which means you have me in for life. Donald Folsom, who was in Scrubs, is in this movie. And special mention to Owen Atlas, who plays Little Lucas, who basically looks like Damien from The Omen. And that's what it is Adam Scott has recently married into a family. The son, his new stepson, is essentially the Antichrist, and all manner of hilarity ensues. It was fun, actually. This one wasn't great, wasn't hilarious. There was some laughs in there for sure. But it was fun, and I think that's what they were aiming for. There was some scenarios set up that I did have quite a bit of a chuckle to, and I do genuinely like Adam Scott as an actor, and it's great to see Sally Field in anything. But yeah, I don't know if I was expecting... I kind of feel like the way I'm putting this over is it sounds like I was expecting something more, and I wasn't. It kind of met my expectations exactly. And for that, you know, that's a cool thing. It's two thumbs up. But I never really, it didn't better my expectations. So I don't know if I can necessarily mark it down for that one. Yeah, this is a ton of fun. If you fancy a good horror comedy that's total nonsense, you shove in the background, you can go away, make yourself a sandwich and come back and feel that you've missed nothing that has happened on the screen, then check out Little Evil. I would give it a 3.5 out of 5. So yeah, check that one out, which means I have one movie left to talk about, which is the movie that I watched last night. And this one could be quite interesting because I get the feeling this one is another one of these ones where it's a polarizing movie. And as soon as I posted on the page, a couple of people said like that, oh, I really liked this movie, really interested to find out what Duncan made of the movie, which is pretty cool. I was like, yes, that's what I want. I want you to listen to this episode to see what I make of the movie. And then there was an assumption made by our buddy Boz from the Little Pod of Horror, who was like that, oh, Duncan will love this movie. I'm going on record, Duncan will love this movie. And Boz, I am sorry to say that you were 100% right. I thought this movie was fucking brilliant. So this is A Personal Shopper. Does not sound like a horror movie. And that'll play into a conversation we'll have right at the very end. It's directed by Olivier Anasis. Can't pronounce his name. The movie stars Kirsten Stewart, she of Twilight fame, Lars Eggener, Sigrid Buazes, Anders Danielson, Lee, Ty Alwyn, other folk. It's a lot of foreign people in this movie because it's a French movie, that's right. It's listed on IMDb as being a drama, horror, mystery. And the synopsis is, a personal shopper in Paris refuses to leave the city until she makes contact with her twin brother who previously died there. Her life becomes more complicated when a mysterious person contacts her via text message. So, is this a horror movie? It seems to be the question that keeps coming up all the time. I don't want to have to justify if I think it's... there's fucking ghosts in the movie, so like if we're playing by the rules, there's ghosts in the movie. So yes, it's a fucking horror movie. And I can see why people would not classify this as a horror movie. I think it's fringe horror. I think there's enough in there. What it is a really, really well written, really well acted. I mean, Kirsten Stewart's stock went through the roof for me in this movie. And that's not just because she gets her tits out. But it's a really thoughtful, atmospheric, mystery movie. Where we follow Kirsten Stewart's character really trying to make sense of some things. In a really bizarre world that she's not used to, you know, she's living in cities, shopping for rich people, you know, cities that she's been before or seen before, but not been to in a while, and it's a wholly strange setup. I've heard words like Hitchcock flung against this one. I would say there's definitely an element of Hitchcock in here. There's definitely an element of Polanski as well, I think. But what I was more captivated by was the way the story unfolded. I think it's a really deliberately paced, really intriguing little script that had me just rolling with it. The ghost stuff is there for sure. It's not played to scare you. It's maybe played for a bit of atmosphere and a bit of tension, but never played to scare. But it finished and I kind of felt myself thinking, this is a movie I'm going to talk about to people now. And one that I can't wait to watch again. So, yes, I would say if you don't think it's a horror movie, I'm not going to argue with you. I think there's ghosts in it and it's kind of on the fringe. So maybe we can include it. But just first and foremost, I thought it was a wonderful movie. I thought it was very, very, very good. And one of the stronger movies that I have seen this year. I'm kind of looking forward to checking out that Casey Affleck ghost movie now as well, which is apparently also in a similar vein. So yeah, There we go. Personal Shopper for me gets a 5. It gets a 5 out of 5. Thought was really fucking good. So thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So there we go. That is the first 10 movies of my 31 of October. I still have 21 movies to watch this month. And there are some heavy hitters still to come. But on this episode, you heard me review Gerald's Game, which is available on Netflix, A Cure for Wellness, which is available on Blu-ray, DVD, and VOD, Phoenix Forgotten, which is available on VOD, XX, which is available on Netflix, Eat Locals, which is available on VOD, Don't Kill It, which is available on Netflix, Life, which you can buy on DVD, Blu-ray, and VOD, Population Zero, which is available if you know where to look, turn over a few stones and that one will fall out, Little Evil, which is available on Netflix, and Personal Shopper, which is out on VOD, DVD, and Blu-ray. Whew. Right, so I'm going to take my last break of this show. When I come back, I'm closing it out right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been bonus episode number 50, covering the first 10 movies from my 31 of October list. There will be another 2 bonus episodes like this coming up this month, covering the final 21 movies. In the next episode, I'll cover the next 10, and then on the final episode, coming in early November, I will cover the last 11 movies. And there's some huge heavy hitters still to come up that I'm really, really, really looking forward to covering as part of my 31 this year. It's been pretty cool. A couple have let me down thus far, but for the most part, there's been some great movies that I've watched. Quite a lot of horror comedies, so things will get a bit more serious moving forward over the next the next episode's going to be a little bit more heavy hitting. I'm kind of looking forward to that. As we're saying that on Friday this week, Friday the 13th, the podcast Under the Stairs will be releasing its bonus Challenge Teapots episode, Challenge Teapots October 2017 in Movie Club. And by God, I have a fantastic idea for Movie Club, which plays into the date it's recorded on. That's all I'm saying. You're smart people, you'll probably work it out for yourselves. So that episode will drop on Friday this week. And then the following Monday, we will return with Baz v Halloween episode number 4. Oh, that's right. The Baz will be facing Funny Games and Capture, Kill, Release. Let's see if we can claw back some points from the Baz. Right, but there is... yeah, there's so much content still to come in this month. October is mental. The download numbers are crazy. I've already posted, if you're listening to this, on the Facebook group page, a poll that you can go and vote on up until Tuesday next week as to what the Russian Roulette franchise retrospective should be next. There's some pretty interesting choices. I specifically picked franchises with 4 installments in them. So you've got Sleepaway Camp, Wishmaster, Scream and Jaws as your chances up there. Sleepaway Camp is more than double its closest rival Jaws at the moment, which is insane. Kind of looks like that's the way it's going. So there will be a Russian Roulette retrospective coming up in November, so keep your eyes peeled for that, as well as so many other things like the Shiflanigans episode, the Bazziversary episode, tons and tons and tons of stuff. Lots of podcasts Under the Stairs coming up. And there's a multitude of ways to check out those shows when they drop. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe to the feed. You get the episodes as and when they arrive, as well as access to the entire back catalogue of Teapot shows. Please leave us a rating and a review. Ratings are really important. They push us up the iTunes charts for other people to find us. And the reviews tell people why they should give up their day and give up their podcasts and add Teapots to the library. You can check us out on TuneIn, you can check us out on Stitcher Smart Radio, on Google Play and on SoundCloud. Please visit our website teapotscast.com, join our mailing list by going to the bottom of that webpage, typing in your email and become part of that mailing list. I'm aware that there should have been a newsletter already out. It's going to come out at the end of this week, ladies and gents, with our October competition to win a horror box full of goodies. So keep your eyes peeled on your emails and make sure you're registered to be in with a chance to enter that competition. Visit our Facebook group page. It's fantastic. It's facebook.com/groups/teapotscast, and then go over and torment the Baz on Instagram and on Twitter. Both can be found at teapotscast. So there we go. That brings us to the very end of this special bonus episode, but there will be another bonus episode on Friday, and then another one coming very, very quickly after that, covering the next 10 movies in my 31 of October. So what's going to be on that list? Well, assuming I get my hands on all the movies that I want, we will be kicking off with Cult of Chucky, then Tonight She Comes, The Ritual, The Snowman, Killing Ground, Freehold, The Amityville, The Awakening, The Ice Cream Truck, The Escape Room, and then finishing off with a little movie called Happy Death Day. So yeah, that should be coming up on the next bonus episode. But wherever you are, whatever the time zone is, and whatever you're up to in this big bad world out there, please take care of yourselves. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from under the stairs, and I'm signing off.
And they need